Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics.
Sean Payton was horrible in clock management. That should never be the case with this New Orleans Saints team.
Well, we're waiting.
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Welcome back to a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. Middle of the week, live from the Auto Farm Studios. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. A lot more NFL talk to get into today as free agency continues. A lot of trades today, more trades than what we've had over the last couple of days. One of the trades that really surprised me was Nick Foles leaving Jacksonville and going to the Chicago Bears in a deal that really only involves a fourth-round pick from Chicago, which was a compensatory pick to begin with. This one kind of shocked me a little bit. We'll go into the details of it. Let's put it this way. The Jaguars have to eat $18.7 million in dead money for the coming year after getting rid of Nick Foles in this deal. And they didn't even have to add a pick to get that contract over to Chicago. It wasn't a great contract. It was horrible. And Nick Foles basically played, I think, 11 quarters for the Jaguars. And I think what makes this even more remarkable is that after cutting Blake Bortles last year, the Jaguars have now paid $35.2 million in dead money over the past two off seasons. That's incredible. You go back probably about 3 months ago, we talked about the rebuilding phase for the Jaguars, and I thought, you're going to have to trade Gardner Minshew. I'm not sold on Minshew to begin with. Sample size is extremely small. And the reason I thought you'd have to trade Minshew to try to get something of value for him was simple. I didn't think anybody would take that Nick Foles contract. But the Bears did. And so now Mitch Trubisky has some true competition. And the way you have to look at this, Nick Foles is a backup quarterback, a serviceable starter, a brilliant backup in this league, a good backup. That's what he is. And when the Jaguars spent all this money, Shad Khan, the owner, I remember he said it was a dream come true that day that the Jaguars shelled out all that money to Nick Foles. And it didn't pan out, and the Jaguars are doing everything they can to rebuild. We'll dissect this trade a little bit more later on in the show. But to me, that was the shocking one. Because, again, Jacksonville did not have to give up anything more to get rid of that contract. Now, it's not bad for the Bears. If you take a look at the other quarterback options out there, you don't want Cam Newton. Right? The Bears obviously don't want Cam Newton. Because I'd have to believe, or maybe Cam Newton doesn't want the Bears, because the Panthers said, figure out the place you want to go. Chicago was a possible destination. Maybe he doesn't want to go there. Andy Dalton, Nick Foles, I don't know. You're splitting hairs at this point in time. Just know that Foles' career with Jacksonville, it was short-lived, and now he is gone. Another trade that went down earlier today, and if you're a Tennessee Titan fan, well, this is what happens when you spend a lot of money in order to retain your quarterback and use the franchise tag on Derrick Henry. I mean, they kept the two most viable free agent possibilities that they had. They found a way to retain them. But in the process, they had to trade Jarrell Casey. And they trade him to the Denver Broncos for relatively nothing. It's a simple cap dump. They've already lost Conklin to free agency. And again, this is what is so odd about the NFL. You can go ahead and really build up players. Eventually, the cap, it's built for parity in teams like the Tennessee Titans. They're not going to be able to hang on to players like Jarrell Casey. He goes to the Denver Broncos. I believe it was a fourth-round pick. Again, we'll take a look at that deal a little bit later on as well. So if you're a Titan fan, you're probably not very happy with that. But in the grand scheme of things, you found a way to lock two prominent offensive weapons, or what appear to be prominent offensive weapons, up long term. The Denver Broncos did get some bad news today. Outside of acquiring Jarrell Casey, they did lose defensive back Chris Harris, and he is going to go to a division rival. He has agreed to a deal with the Los Angeles Chargers. Take a look at that secondary. My goodness. It's going to be tough to throw on this Charger football team. Harris is 31 this summer, one of the longest tenured Broncos. He made the roster as an undrafted rookie back in 2011, and it was in that same year John Elway started his tenure as the top football decision maker with the Broncos. Since that point, he's gone to 4 Pro Bowls. Remember the no-fly zone secondary? Bronco fans remember that well. Right, it put the Broncos in the Super Bowl, actually won Super Bowl 50 against Cam Newton and the Panthers. He's the final member of that no-fly zone secondary. So with this right here, just looking at what the Chargers have, Casey Hayward, Desmond King, Derwin James, Rashawn Jenkins. This is going to be a very potent secondary. It may be the best in the NFL. I think it's a win for the Chargers. As far as the Broncos are concerned, I don't know that Chris Harris is as great as Chris Harris believes he is. And more guaranteed money coming from the Chargers than what the Broncos offered him. I don't know that I would lose any sleep over it if I'm Denver. The thing that hurts the worst is that he goes to a division rival, right? That's what hurts the most. You don't lose him to the NFC. You lose him to the Los Angeles Chargers. Is it going to hurt the Broncos? Absolutely. You make a trade with the Jaguars just a little bit ago, and you think, okay, Denver's once again building a real formidable secondary, and now Harris is going to bolt, no pun intended, as he joins the Chargers. Some other news coming out of the NFL. One of the leading pass rushers for the Los Angeles Rams, Dante Fowler, has reached a 3-year, $48 million deal with the Atlanta Falcons. Atlanta struggled last year getting to the football. 28 sacks. Fowler played for Dan Quinn when he was in college at Florida, so it definitely makes sense. And he's going to bring some quickness off the edge. They're going to pair him with Grady Jarrett's push inside. I think this will work out nicely. Fowler last year had a great season with the Rams. Wasn't a great three and a half years with the Jaguars, but the Rams make a move for Fowler a year and a half ago. He's on the team as they go to the Super Bowl. Remember, he made the big play in overtime, applying pressure to Drew Brees, forcing the interception. Last year, Fowler had 11.5 sacks for the Rams. And the thing about Fowler, you thought maybe the Rams were gearing up to pay him when they let Corey Littleton go. That wasn't the case. They can't afford to keep Dante Fowler. He signs a deal with the Atlanta Falcons. The Rams, however, did answer back, and they answered back quickly, and I guess saving a little bit of money while still trying to find somebody that can apply a pass rush on the outside. The Rams signed Leonard Floyd. Now, he's coming off a career-low 3 sacks for the Bears last season, but it's a 1-year deal worth about $10 million. I think Leonard Floyd still has a lot of football left in him. I don't hate this deal for the Rams at all, but that is one of the moves that the Rams make today, finally doing something in free agency. And they also, the Rams, speaking of what they have done, Andrew Whitworth, aging left tackle who would hit free agency going into his 15th season. He has signed a 3-year deal to remain with the Rams. He said he wanted to close out his career in LA. It looks like that'll certainly be the case. 3-year deal with the Rams earlier today. That's just some of the news that is happening right now in the NFL, which is dominating the national sports front. In just a moment, we're going to switch it up. We're going to pause from the NFL because we have plenty of NFL talk coming up a little bit later on in the show. Yesterday, there was some very sad news in the world of sports. Roger Mayweather, famed trainer for Floyd Mayweather and also a 2-time world champion, passed away at the age of 58. When you look at what Floyd Mayweather accomplished over the course of his career, it is one of the most brilliant individual careers we have ever seen. I don't believe Roger Mayweather gets enough credit for the success that Floyd had, not only in the ring, but also outside of the ring. You take a look at what he accomplished in the ring, again, a 2-time world champion. He had some battles. He was the original Black Mamba. He passes away yesterday at the age of 58. We'll talk about that, and we'll also talk about the exciting news. Canelo in Triple G3 coming up. That is a fight that I will gladly pay for in the world of boxing. We're going to get into some boxing talk in just a bit, and we'll continue to talk NFL football. It's right here on this Wednesday edition of Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Farm Studios. We're back in just a moment.
Now, this local Castle Country sports update with Jordan Buscarini from KOAL.
Reporting from the KOAL newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. And while the spring sports season is currently at a standstill, that will give us an opportunity to take a look at individual teams who are currently waiting to compete. Today, we will begin with the Carbon Dino baseball team, and through five games, Carbon has accumulated a record of 2-3. The Dino baseball team earned a win over Payson in the season opener 4-2. They followed that up with a loss to Summit Academy on March 6th, 5-2, before bouncing back the following day to Top West on the road 11-2. Last week, Carbon resumed the season with a 2-0 loss to Bountiful and followed that up with a 9-0 loss to Provo. We recently caught up with manager Jeff Cincinnatus, and he talked about the team's most two recent outings, March 9th against Bountiful and March 10th against Provo.
I don't want to say a rough start to the season. I mean, we're 2-3 right now, but we have played some very quality opponents in those five games and played pretty well. I mean, overall, I mean, obviously there's things as a coach you're never going to be happy with. We could be 5-0, and I'd probably be talking about the same things right now that we need to work on and get better. That's just the way it is. But a lot of positives in different aspects of the game.
Throughout the first five games of the season, Carbon accumulated just a .183 batting average and a .236 on base percentage. Up to this point in time, junior Cooper Shade has accumulated a .375 batting average and 16 plate appearances. He's accumulated 6 hits, 2 RBIs, and a team-best 4 doubles. Also helping the Carbon offense was another junior, Brayton Nielsen. Nielsen had accumulated a batting average of .286, and as far as his stats at the plate, he'd accumulated 2 hits and just 7 at-bats to go along with 1 double. Leading the team at RBIs, it was junior Derek Robison. He had 4 RBIs and just 11 at-bats. Moving over to the defensive side of the ball, 2 wins have been logged for Carbon in the pitching category, Cooper Shade and also Cade Dimmick. The Dinos have been led throughout the year up to this point. Carbon had received a team effort on the mound, showcasing an opponent batting average of just .194. The opponent's on-base percentage was currently sitting at .329. As a team, Carbon had accumulated 38 strikeouts from the mound and facing 155 batters. Other notable pitchers who had gotten off to a strong start for Carbon was sophomore Jordan Fawcett, along with senior Tyler Wright.
Pitching right now has still been a big positive for us. We've had some great outings by our pitching staff in our 2-0 loss to Bountiful. You know, Jordan Fawcett threw 5 wonderful innings for us at that level against that team. You know, I felt really good about that outing on Monday, even though it was a loss, and you know, no one likes to lose. I surely don't schedule games saying, you know, it's a moral victory to just play teams. I'm here to win, and our guys are here to win, and you know, and a loss is a loss, but I think we took a lot of positives away from that loss.
Now, unfortunately, the Carbon baseball team was scheduled to play host to a youth camp this afternoon due to the COVID-9 epidemic that has been canceled. Stay tuned to Castle Country Radio. We will continue to talk spring sports and dissect individual spring sports squads here in the local area by taking a look at the statistics on what they had gathered up to this point in time in the season. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to tonight's main event.
That sound, of course, means it's time for some boxing talk here on Drive Time Sports. Very sad day yesterday in the world of boxing. We said goodbye to Roger Mayweather, 2-time world champion, also the trainer and really a focal point in the career of Floyd Money Mayweather. We're going to talk about Roger Mayweather's impact on the sport of boxing. We'll also talk about the news that Canelo Alvarez and Triple G will do it once again, at least we think, barring everything falling in place coming up this September. Joining us right now to talk about that and more, we have our boxing insider, Tony Whitby. Tony, always a pleasure to get you on the show. I appreciate the time.
Yeah, it's always good to be here, JB.
I was actually on the phone with you yesterday when the news broke that Roger Mayweather had passed away, really at the young age of 58. It wasn't a surprise, but there's always that shock factor, right, when someone who has meant so much to the sport in a certain way passes on. We knew that Roger Mayweather had ailing health. We hadn't seen him in Floyd's Corner since 2012. But really, it gave us both an opportunity, Tony, I know, to go back and take a look at not only what he accomplished in Floyd's Corner, but also as a fighter. I mean, this is a guy that meant an awful lot to the sport of boxing. And really, when you take a look at one of the most successful athletes in the history of sports in Floyd Mayweather, Roger Mayweather is a focal point of that. And I don't think that could be overstated.
No, it can't be, and not anytime soon as well. Just his pedigree as a boxer, his mindset, and, you know, in the ring and outside the ring as well. It can't be overstated. I wouldn't disagree at all. The boxing community lost a huge, you know, focal point, a huge, you know, just an overall foundation of it was kind of shook, and I can't stress that enough. I mean, literally, we were on the phone yesterday, and you said, "Hey, this is being reported," and I was like, "I got to go. I got to make some phone calls." And it's shaking up the community without a doubt.
For those who are unaware of what Roger meant to Floyd, we can give a little bit of a background on it. Roger Mayweather was boxing as late as 1999. And I know that was 20 years ago, 21 years ago, but when you have to tell yourself that was 21 years ago. It doesn't seem like it was that long ago, 1999. But Roger, he stepped away, kind of turned his attention away from his boxing career, and he focused more on being Floyd Mayweather's guy, being his trainer in 1996. Roger trained Mayweather until around 98. That's when Floyd Sr. was released from prison. He became Mayweather's trainer. Soon after that, Mayweather really became... dare I say, he was becoming a household name, Floyd Jr. There's more issues with Floyd Sr. Roger Mayweather steps back up at around 2000 to 2012. He's sitting there. He's the vocal point for Mayweather. And then we see him, I guess, run into some major health problems around 2012. But the fact of the matter is, by 2012, Floyd Mayweather could have been his own trainer at that particular time. And I don't mean to take anything away from Floyd Sr., but even from a business standpoint, Tony, as you and I were talking about off the cuff, when Floyd Sr. wasn't there, and when Floyd Jr. very easily could have been on his own, Roger Mayweather was there, and he helped Floyd Jr. garner that national attention, which ultimately catapulted him to stardom.
Yeah, I mean, it can't. There is no hyperbole when we speak right now about this situation and the passing of Roger. There is no Floyd money, you know, Floyd Mayweather Jr. without Roger. There is no question, it's indubitably, there's no argument. You could argue a lot of different, you know, paths and ideas about it, but without Roger being Roger and Floyd Jr. being Floyd Jr., the way that everything that's happened in boxing history in the last 20 years, a large part of that, whether people realize it or don't, is because of Roger, and it's sad to see him pass away at a young age.
Now, I know that Roger Mayweather was semi-prominent in your area. Of course, for those who don't know, you live in Phoenix, Arizona, so in that particular realm, there's Roger Mayweather training fighters, and you and I had a conversation. You said it took a while for you to understand why. Why is Roger Mayweather here in this area training fighters? Tony, it's a great story.
Yeah, the way I kind of look at it is, you know, I follow boxing my entire life, so on and so forth, and credentials and press, whatnot. And, you know, around 2009, 2010, we started to hear inklings, hey, you know, Roger Mayweather's training this fight or training that fight. I'm like, what? That really? And, you know, for Phoenix, well, obviously we're not in L.A. being the boxing mecca and Vegas being, you know, where all of major fights are being fought at, or in New York and Gleason's Gym. We don't have any of that type of prestige. But Roger Mayweather and Jeff Mayweather would come down here and train and kind of spot some of the young talent out here and kind of see what they could be a part of. And a lot of them ended up becoming, you know, TNT promotion, you know, fighters and whatnot. And, you know, I met him a couple times. He's always a fun character to have a conversation with. You know, he always kind of had his cues and the ways that he would see reality in boxing, and me being not the most, you know, pro Mayweather fan, you know, I'd get my shots and he'd kind of laugh and, you know, we'd have a joke about it. And, it was that, but, you know, and like we were saying, long-term wise, now I can look back, you know, and see, look, man, this all made sense because this is prior to you know, the money team promotion, they were scouting young fighters to be a part of their team, and you know, some of them are still there today, you know, dealing with it. So I reached out to a couple of them yesterday, just kind of check their heads, see where they're at with it. They were hearing the news, and you know, there was a portion of the city of Phoenix that, you know, feels the sadness, and we understand the importance and the significance of not only his career, but the careers that he's helped bring up, not just his own, you know, nephews, but people around here. So yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard.
You brought up the best boxing family, okay, and we've talked about the success that Floyd, you and I have talked about Floyd Mayweather for a decade here on this show. We know what Floyd Sr. accomplished. You mentioned Jeff Mayweather. We're going over Roger Mayweather again, a two-time world champion. Really was behind one of the driving forces of the most prominent career we've seen. With all that being said, if you talk best boxing families, you better start the Mayweathers by mentioning Roger, right? I mean, you have to pay that much respect. I know that Floyd is the most well-known, but if you ever have that discussion with best boxing families, and the Mayweathers obviously deserve a seat at that table for that conversation, you better start it with Roger.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, his pedigree, and I just remember, like, for me personally, when I look at Roger's career, if we're just going to break down his overall career itself, you know, winning some of the fights that he did and how he did it, he was always entertaining in the ring. He didn't fight like, you know, Floyd Jr. You know, there was a little bit more spunk, a little bit more tenacity, more snap in his punches right off the bat. He was a real fighter's fighter, if you will. To me, my biggest fights that I always remember would be the Chavez fight, where he actually lost, but also the Vinny Paz fight. You know, being a Sweet Pea fan personally, too, seeing him lose that fight and kind of going back and checking the tapes on that. I remember being a young kid watching that, and then obviously being from Arizona watching the Baltazar fight as well. The dude was entertaining in the ring, and not just, you know, entertaining. You know, movement. The guy, he was a real fighter, man. He fought anyone he could. Like you said, he fought up until 1999. Well, his career started in 81. You know what I mean? So most boxers don't have an 18-year... they don't have that length in time fighting for 18 years. So, you know, it's not common to see that, without a doubt.
Again, Tony Whippy, our guest right now as we talk the world of boxing. Tony, I did mention that the other news that came out yesterday was a little bit more uplifting, the idea that we could see Canelo Alvarez in the ring once again going up against Triple G. I made the comment here on the show, these guys could fight 15 times, and I'm gonna pay to watch them fight 15 times. The fact of the matter is they have fought 24 rounds, and up to this point in time, I give Canelo a one-round lead, maybe two rounds at the absolute most, because the first fight, in my opinion, was a draw. I thought that Canelo won the second meeting by the slimmest of margins. This is just one of those matchups where I don't care the age, I don't care when, where, I will pay to watch these two fight. I was excited about this news.
Yeah, and let's put the marker down right now where we're going to probably talk about this fight for the next, you know, 6 months, obviously. So right now, first inklings, as you were saying, you know, two rounds to Canelo. I flashback, or I snap back, and I say two rounds more to Golovkin. First one, Golovkin wins by a round. Second fight is a draw. So I'm just known that there's that difference. But we haven't really talked even off air off of this, but I do think, in my opinion, I do think two things. Number one, I think Canelo wins this fight, and he probably wins it probably handedly. And number two, it's probably going to be because of the ring negotiations outside of the ring prior to the case, and the fact that we're seeing a much older Triple G than what we originally saw. I think with just those two type of major variables, I can't see any reason why Golovkin, even though I felt won the first one, draw the second one, I can't see him winning this one at all. I don't know if there's anything that's going to be out there to change my mind.
Yeah, I mean, let's be real. By the time these two get to the ring, we're talking about a 29, 30-year-old Canelo Alvarez going up against a 37, 38-year-old Triple G. And if you go back to the very first fight, which was highly entertaining, and again, I remember being, I scored it a draw. I actually got to cover the second fight. I was there. To me, there was no doubt Canelo won that fight. I knew that there was still some controversy around it for whatever reason in the arena that night. I had to question a lot of people, why in the world would you say Triple G won that fight? The majority decision kind kind of mind-boggled me a little bit. But since that point, if you just take a look at what direction these two have gone, that first fight took place in 2017. Canelo, in my mind now, with the way athletes are built, Tony, he is in the prime of his career. He is. I don't think there's any doubt about it. We saw what he did to Sergey Kovalev. I thought it was an entertaining fight. You can make whatever argument you want to make against Kovalev in that fight. He won a unanimous decision against Danny Jacobs, and he also took care of Rocky Fielding. To me, right now, we're seeing the best version of Canelo. I know for a fact we're not seeing the best version of Triple G.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I mean, by the time Fight Night comes out, Triple G will be 38, and I don't see anything that would lead me to believe that it's going to go any other way. Now, mind you, me saying that doesn't say, hey, nobody pay attention to this fight, nobody watch this fight, you know, it's going to be a slam dunk for, you know, Canelo, it's going to be a waste of everyone's time. No, not at all. Me being of more of the Triple G camp and, you know, liking Triple G and really being a strong component of somebody who just always enjoyed his fights, I will always pay attention to a Triple G fight, and Canelo being who Canelo is, you know, overall, arguably the biggest star in boxing, if not in the top three, however you want to deal with that, anytime either one of these guys are going to fight, I'm going to want to watch. Now, you're absolutely right when the way you led this segue was, look, anytime these guys fight, I want to watch it, and I don't see anything different. I think I'm going to be just as entertained as I was in the first two fights. So, yeah, let's all pay attention. I just don't think Triple G wins this one. It would be very surprising to me, but I'm excited for it. Absolutely. I would love to see it happen in May as opposed to September, personally. But given the situations that's out there, I understand why we're putting it out there. We're putting it so far in advance.
It's definitely going to be a fun conversation to have in the very near future. Tony, outside of what we've talked about, you and I have been going over some really interesting conversations to have here on the show in the coming weeks, knowing that the sports scene is kind of dying down a little bit right now as it's on pause. You and I brought up the possibility of talking about dream matchups, and I love the way you put it. We're taking every boxing thread that you can find on the internet, and we're going to put that onto the airwaves. Dream matchups. I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we can always argue all day long about what we see, who we thought would have won versus who, you know, prime versus prime, you know, whatever the case may be. I definitely am excited about it. I mean, it's always fun to, you know, this is why boxing is one of those fun sports that you can really get into. And if you can get in the weeds with it and understand the nuances, you know, this is what people are in the bars are talking about at times, you know. So it's always fun to kind of play fantasy a little bit and just say, what if this would have happened? What could we talk about, you know, inside the ring, outside the ring, speculation, you know, all the little things about each one of those individual characters. And that's why I always, when I talk about boxing, people ask me, why do I love boxing so much? It's the stories. And in a situation when you're doing with fantasy matchups, you're talking about the story of one fighter, and you're placing it with the story of another fighter, and they obviously have never seen each other, never kind of had that opportunity. So you kind of mix out this algorithm or this alchemy of craziness, and just to say, hey, I think this person would have beat this person. And, it's a fun little argument sometimes. Sometimes people agree, and most of the time people don't. Let's be honest.
Yeah, that's what makes it so great. I'm looking forward to it. Again, Tony Whitby, our boxing insider, taking out the time to join us on the show today. Tony, it's always a pleasure. I appreciate the time. Thank you so much.
Hey, man. Always good to be here, JB.
We're going to break for just a moment. We'll come back and put the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports right after this.
In 5, 4, 3, 2.
I'm Joe Wade Formicola, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
Zero name, no gimmicks.
On 750 AM, KOAL.
So I came to the grave. Zero name, no gimmicks. That's why I ain't got no.
A few more topics I want to hit on as far as the NFL is concerned on today's edition of the show. Now, late last night, I shouldn't say late, about 5 o'clock, news came through. Adam Schefter reporting that Tom Brady was going to sign with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I've had so many conversations with other people about this that I almost forgot we haven't talked about this here on Drive Time Sports. We knew it was a possibility. We thought it was a very likely possibility yesterday. Didn't want to close the deal on the idea of him playing for the Los Angeles Chargers. But now we know Tom Brady is going to go to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And I guess the first question that a lot of people would have is why? I can assure you that this Tampa Bay Buccaneer team is much closer to competing for a Super Bowl than it appears on the surface. I can tell you why it makes sense on multiple levels for Tom Brady. For one, the report came out, he wanted to stay back east, closer to back east for his family, but he wanted to move on from New England. Well, that pretty much rules out the Chargers, who I think could win a Super Bowl this year. I think the only thing holding the Chargers back is what they have at the quarterback position, and that's Tyrod Taylor, and I don't believe he's capable of leading a team to the Super Bowl. I just don't. I like Tyrod Taylor. I think Tyrod Taylor is a great fill-gap quarterback, but typically when you're looking for that fill-gap quarterback, you're not competing for a Super Bowl. I could be wrong. I hope I'm wrong because, again, I'm a big Tyrod Taylor guy, but to me, Tom Brady would have fit seamlessly in with that Charger squad and what they were looking to do. His desire to stay closer to back east, that rules out the Chargers. You look at the amount of money that Tampa Bay has, and this comes after they use the franchise tag on Shaq Barrett. They extend Jason Pierre-Paul. The Bucs still have a massive amount of cap space. And it is being reported that the deal is going to be worth close to $30 million per year. However long that may be. I'm going to say 2 years. I think they get two seasons out of Tom Brady. Okay, so even with the Brady deal, and you evenly distribute it, you don't backload it, you don't frontload it, Tampa Bay can comfortably fit $30 million into its budget this year. Is it a big of a risk to give a guy that's going to be 43 years old $30 million a year? I would say yes, but we're talking about Tom Brady, the greatest to ever do it. That's part of the reason why this makes sense for Tom Brady. We'll talk about why it makes sense for Tampa Bay on the business side in just a moment. That's a no-brainer. But let's look at the weapons that Tom Brady now has in Tampa Bay. He's got Mike Evans, and when you look at the physically gifted wide receivers that we have seen over the past 20 years, Mike Evans fits at the very top of that bill. This guy is very, very good. And I know that this is a team that threw the football an awful lot last year. They were very turnover prone because they wanted to work the ball on the outside, down the field, outside the numbers. But just look at the amount of production from Mike Evans. Since coming into the league back in 2014 as a 21-year-old, Mike Evans has gone over the 1,000-yard mark every single season, including 1,500 yards receiving in 2018. Now, I get that Brady had a great rapport with the likes of, say, Danny Amendola, who's no longer there, Julian Edelman, right? These are lesser names. Troy Brown early on in his career. He had Randy Moss for the 1 year. This is the best wide receiver that Tom Brady has played with since Randy Moss. I assure you. Mike Evans is that good. 48 touchdowns over the course of his career. He had 12 his rookie season. He hasn't been able to break the 12 touchdown mark. But a lot of that has to do with who's playing on the opposite side. And that's Chris Godwin. And this kid is also very, very good. In fact, Chris Godwin may be one of the best young playmakers on the outside in the NFL today. I fell in love with Chris Godwin at the beginning of last season. Every fantasy expert that we had on the show said the exact same thing. This kid is really good. Nab him in any fantasy league that you play in. And what does he do? He goes for 1,300 yards this past season, and he finds the end zone 9 times. Since he came into the league in 2017, you have seen a drastic increase in his receiving yards. 842 in 2018, 1,300 last season. If you say that's the best wide receiver duo in the NFL, you have a valid point, and I don't think anyone can argue with you. That helps. Okay? Options at tight end. Remember, Tom Brady loves to use the tight end, and a lot of what he did in New England, especially over the past 10 years or so, under routes. Tight ends play a huge role. O.J. Howard, who I loved coming out of college, had a down season, is now teamed up with Cameron Brate. Between those two at tight end, Brady has all the necessary weapons that he needs on the outside. One of the things that this Tampa Bay roster definitely needs that they do not have is a running back. I still believe there's plenty of options out there. In fact, I think it's a very real possibility that Tampa Bay finds a way to get Todd Gurley. I think at some point in time, if the Rams let Todd Gurley go or they decide to trade him, to me, it's Tampa Bay. The Buccaneers will find a way to put Gurley in that backfield, and then Tampa Bay gets even more dangerous. So again, just looking at what Bruce Arians has accomplished, looking at the way he leans on quarterbacks, we're talking about Andrew Luck, we're talking about Ben Roethlisberger, we're talking about Carson Palmer. These are guys that Bruce Arians has built a great rapport with. That's because he lets his quarterbacks in on not only the weekly game plan, but also personnel decisions. And that played a factor as well. It's a perfect spot for Tom Brady to land. And I do believe that the Buccaneers will be a Super Bowl contender because I still think the roster is incomplete. I still think they continue to improve this roster over the next couple of weeks. I think they find more weapons for Brady. If you're a Buccaneer fan, you have to be ecstatic. Because like I always say, the only thing a fan can ask for is that a team tries to win. There is no question this Tampa Bay Buccaneer team is trying to win. Now let's take a look at why it makes sense for the Buccaneers from a business standpoint. And that was the reoccurring topic on the show yesterday. Does it make sense from a business standpoint? Because that's what's important. We look at it from a football point of view. And again, it makes perfect sense for Brady to play in Tampa Bay based off of everything I just gave you on the offensive side of the ball. Why does it make sense for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to give a 43-year-old quarterback $30 million per season? 3 hours after Adam Schefter reported that Tom Brady would sign with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, 5,000 people entered the online queue for season tickets for Tampa Bay. Chris Collinsworth said that you could expect multiple trips to Florida for Sunday Night Football. This right here, it's so low risk business-wise because Tampa Bay instantly goes from irrelevant, and they have been mostly irrelevant for the better part of two decades, decade and a half. They have. They instantly become a team that you can't help but watch. I mean, if you love Tom Brady or if you hate Tom Brady, I promise you, you will watch Tampa Bay week one. You're going to be so intrigued by just watching this guy run out of the tunnel in a different uniform, not wearing a Patriot helmet. I assure you, you will pay attention to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers week one. And I think they're going to be pretty good. And for that alone, it's the reason I kept glamoring for him to go to the Chargers, because he was exactly what that franchise needed. They haven't made a dent in that very, very difficult market, right? They couldn't sell out a 25,000-seat stadium. To me, it was a no-brainer from a business perspective for the Chargers to give him a lot of money. Same concept here with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They have the right coach. They have the right offensive coordinator in Byron Leftwich. You know Tom Brady has got to be thrilled with the amount of weapons that he has. And yes, there's more offensive weapons on the outside. Outside of Hunter Henry, maybe Keenan Allen, there's more weapons on this unit with Tampa Bay, in my mind, than there are with the Chargers. There just is. But the big factor, according to Tom Brady, was he wanted to stay back east. I love it. I think it fits. As far as the Glazers are concerned, there's no question. You sign a check for $30 million to bring Tom Brady in, you will see an instant return on that investment. I guarantee it. And yes, I do believe the Tampa Bay Buccaneers will be NFC Championship contenders. A lot of things have to go right, but I still believe this roster is incomplete. Let's break one last time. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up. I want to go over the numbers of this Nick Foles to Chicago deal. It's mind-blowing how much money Nick Foles got out of Jacksonville for playing 11 quarters. We'll take a look at that and see if it makes sense for what's now in store in Chicago. We're going to have a quarterback battle between Mitch Trubisky and Nick Foles. Well, that sounds entertaining, doesn't it? More coming up live from the Auto Farm Studios. It's Drive Time Sports.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750. The play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
Let's close out this edition of Drive Time Sports. Bring in Travis Anderson to help do that. Travis, just spent a segment talking about Tom Brady. I love the fit. I think it fits all the way around. I think it works for Tampa. I think it works for Brady. I think Tampa is going to be a force to be reckoned with in the NFC. Your thoughts?
I love the fit. I mean, if Jameis Winston can go in there and throw for, what, 5,000 yards and 30 touchdowns, and he's not very good, I think Tom Brady's just going to fit fine with Tampa Bay. So I like it. I love the fit.
Let's end by talking about this Foles deal. Jacksonville clearing out $3.3 million in savings. And again, I'm going to go back to what I said at the beginning of the show. I am really stunned that Jacksonville gets out of this contract with Nick Foles. Chicago bailed them out today. And I do believe that it's probably a good fit in Chicago. I don't think there's going to be a lot of fascination around the quarterback controversy or the quarterback battle, Trubisky and Nick Foles. And I think by the new restructure of Foles' deal in Chicago, he's there one season and he's gone. I think it's very possible that Trubisky is gone at the end of this next season as well. But these numbers, I don't know if you've studied this contract or if you know the ins and outs. Let me give you this. Nick Foles made $30.5 million last season.
Good for him.
He played in four games, 11 quarters. Injury and lack of production.
Yeah, it was interesting when he got hurt and he came back and he didn't look very well at all. So he goes to Chicago now. We'll see. I just don't know if Nick Foles is ever going to get to the point where he's a good quarterback again.
But my question
but
is...
But he hasn't really ever been that good.
Yeah, that's my next question. Was he ever a good quarterback, a great quarterback? Because even going back to the magic that worked in Philly, that was such a good football team all the way around. He had a lot of weapons.
New England's defense was horrible.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I think maybe we overvalued Nick Foles. Look, Carson Wentz was the MVP of the league that season before he goes down with that injury in L.A. He was the MVP of the league.
Yes, he was.
Right? Nick Foles picked up right where Carson Wentz left off. And has Carson Wentz ever played at an MVP level since that season? Sometimes it just works, okay? But looking at the new deal, it's worth $57 million over 3 years with the Bears. Only $15 million is guaranteed right now. I promise you, he's not going to see a penny more than $15.1 million. It's not going to happen. He's going to get that $15.1 this year. The Bears will get out of that contract. They have bought themselves a lot of cap flexibility moving forward. One of the reoccurring trends that we've seen this free agency period, teams and players both are keeping it short and sweet with these contracts because of that hike that we expect to see in the salary cap in the next couple of seasons. Teams are making it short, they're making it sweet, a lot of 1-2 year deals. Jacksonville does clear up $3.3 million in savings, and that's according to SpotTrack, who does a tremendous job breaking down contracts. But they clear out $21 million of what would have been fully guaranteed money in this deal, sending him over to Chicago. So that's the point that I'm trying to make. The Bears absolutely bailed out the Jacksonville Jaguars. They bailed them out.
Yeah, and for the Bears, I mean, how bad have they been, you know, draft-wise, when they traded essentially four draft picks to move up one spot in 2017, bridge quarterback from Mike Glennon to Nick Foles. That's basically what they did.
Yeah, I mean, Mitch Trubisky is who they drafted when they could have they could have stayed where they were at and taken Patrick Mahomes. They could have taken Deshaun Watson. Instead, they move up. They go with Trubisky, who had only played, I believe he started 12 or 13 games at North Carolina, if memory serves me right. It was a real small sample size. The physical tangibles were there, but that was really just a risk that did not pay off. Now you look at the dead cap leaderboard, and this is fascinating to me because your Jets, who dealt out one of the worst contracts in the history of football and what they gave Tremaine Johnson and what they got out of him, that was a terrible contract.
Yeah.
One of the worst we've seen in a long time.
Well, the Jets haven't never been the smartest franchise. We know that.
Yeah, but they're not even close to ranking with some of the top five teams in dead cap space, even with that horrible deal. The Panthers have the most dead cap right now at 46.1. The Jaguars come in at second at $34 million. The Falcons are third at 23.2, followed by the Patriots at 22.5. Those are the leaders right now in dead money. It's been just a crazy offseason for the Jacksonville Jaguars. It's been a crazy, I can't even call it an offseason because remember the deadline when they dealt Jalen Ramsey, right? It's been just a very weird 6-7 months for the Jaguars. It's been weird.
How that one quarter, the fourth quarter in the AFC Championship game turned everything for that franchise.
They were on the cusp.
They were. If they had that game in hand and, you know, down the stretch, just couldn't execute. If they, you know, go on to beat the Patriots in the AFC title game, they might have won the Super Bowl, and we're not talking about all the craziness from Jacksonville.
No, no, we're talking about them saying goodbye to Fowler, Ramsey, Campbell, Oboye, now Nick Foles. That contract was bad to begin with. But the list goes on and on and on. They gave Calais Campbell away. Just gave him away.
Weird. Got a fifth round pick for him.
Weird up for Jacksonville.
It hasn't been pleasant if you're a Jaguar fan. Out of time of the show today. Always fun to get Tony Whippy on to have a conversation about boxing. We're going to start the dream matchups next week. As he mentioned, it'll be Floyd Mayweather versus Roberto Duran. I'm looking forward to that one. That'll be a fun segment. We'll debate barstool sports, basically, is what that is. Out of time on the show today. He's Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. Be safe. We are out.